You are listening to episode 126 of the Africana Woman podcast, Water Solutions, with Lumbi Mlambo. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. Hello, beautiful. How are you? I hope you're doing well. Currently in Zambia, we're experiencing load shedding. And if you're unfamiliar with the term, it means that our electrical power is rationed. So we are going through daily power cuts of up to 8 hours. And in some areas, it may be even more than that. At present, my schedule has been that power is available in the night. And I'm talking about the wee night, okay? So that's when I work. Now, let me tell you what a toll this is taking on me. My circadian rhythm is in full mode resistance, and I cannot help but feel that I'm not as productive as I would want to be. Now, please, before you rush to advise me about how I should get alternative sources of power, let me advise you that that requires finances that are not readily available at the moment. So I'm working with what I have got and working towards said such solutions. In the meantime, I think that this is a conversation we should be having around how do you maintain a healthy lifestyle with this disruption in our power? I mean, it's not impossible. There are lots of things to be thinking about, right? From what you're eating, you know, how much rest you're getting, your physical fitness, all of that. You know, we have to think about those things. Now, for example, most Zambians knoweth not gas stoves, whereas countries like Zimbabwe, Kenya, an electric stove is a pure luxury. Like, it's unthinkable, guys. I have also been thinking around how to adjust our diet to make meals that are easy to prep without power, right? And this is not a popular thought, I know. It's not a popular thought, but I think as a continent, we need to ditch millimeal, okay? And not only is it not doing well in the fields, but it is the most cumbersome thing to prepare. Listen, sadza, pap, insima, whatever you call it, guys. Nobody wants to have a cold in Shima, all right? You have to have it hot, and it is so cumbersome to prepare. But anyway, I just think that there are other alternatives in terms of food. Especially when you're trying to think about how do you do meal prep and, you know, make things that are easy. But anyway, another thing that I think we should consider, and this is more in the lines of our mental health, I think that one of the most destructive things that load shedding is doing to us is training a lot of people to have a scarcity mindset. When we continuously think in the lines of, I don't have enough power, there is not enough time, I don't have enough resources or money, that is not good, guys. I believe that we have to train our brains to think of the periods of load shedding in a positive light. For example, I get to rest more. I get to spend quality time with family and friends. I get to spend more time uninterrupted outside in nature. I get to read more. In fact, let's keep this trend going, okay? Please share what you get to do more of because of load shedding. You can find us in our WhatsApp groups. You can find us on socials at Africana Woman. Now, it's weird and it feels counterintuitive, but it's vital that we treat it with gratitude so as we do not get sucked into a scarcity mindset. Now, before we get into this overflowing conversation, I just wanted to remind you that you, my darling, can win a free 2-day ticket to the Africana Woman Festival that's happening on the 2nd to the 3rd of August. Listen, have you heard about it? Why have you not heard about the festival? Are you kidding me? This is the place to be for ambitious women. If you've got a project you want to kickstart, if you're looking for a business bestie, if you are looking for like-hearted, like-minded women, if you're looking for deep conversations, vulnerable conversations that are judgment-free, if you are just looking for a space where women are thriving, the Africana Woman Festival is for you, my darling. So you are most welcome to come, but guess what? You can even win a golden key. And this golden key unlocks free access to every single event for free, okay? And all you have to do is enter the giveaway. The deadline to enter is on the 15th of April. Find Africana Women Festival on Instagram. So it's at Africana Women Festival on Instagram, or find Africana Woman on LinkedIn, or the Africana Woman Festival event on Facebook. And all you have to do is find the giveaway post, read the instructions very carefully, and enter today. You can be that lucky winner. So we're also accepting food, beverage, and farmers market vendor applications. The deadline is also the 15th of April. Get your application in. We're looking for brands that are selling healthy food options. Guys, we're all about healthy living, okay? And I must say this, healthy does not mean boring. Absolutely not. Healthy is actually really, really fun and delicious. So I'm not looking for oil-drenched foods. But please, we're looking for creativity. Today, we're talking to the Water Lady. Whew, guys, I can't even explain how this year has been so beautiful in terms of timing and just serendipity of things, right? In the book club, we reviewed Wangari Maathai's book on her birthday, the 1st of April. Like how we didn't even plan. And, you know, we're also reading Maya Angelou's book in her birthday month. So 4th of April is Maya Angelou Day on her birthday. And we are reading I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And it's just so serendipitous. I love it. So, you know, even with this episode, when we recorded this, I had no idea that my country, Zambia, was entering into a drought, okay? And the devastation can be felt across the land, from the farmers' dry crops, which threatens food reserves, to the low water in the rivers that generate our hydroelectric power. And it is now crippling the country due to the 8 hours of load shedding. I cannot even begin to explain the effects of no power on the economy at large. So today we get to speak to the Water Lady herself, Lumbi Mlambo, who has been providing sustainable clean water solutions to communities in Zimbabwe and the USA since 2016. This is a brilliant case study of how water solutions can come from technology and collaborations. Lumbi herself is fascinating, and the work she does is beyond necessary at an increasingly alarming rate. This may surprise you. Their water solutions are not boreholes. I know you've been watching lots of videos about, oh, we're saving Africa and we're creating boreholes. No, no, no. That's not what they do. What do they do instead? You'll have to take a listen and consider what role you can play in providing sustainable water solutions in your own community. Enjoy. Zimbabwean Lumbi Mlambo, who received the UN Global Leadership Award, is a Global Goals Ambassador. She earned degrees from Texas Women's University and Indiana University, South Bend. Lumbi made the decision to carry on her orphaned father's legacy after being inspired by the humanitarian work he did in his neighborhood, despite never having attended school. She established the nonprofit organization JB Dondolo after her father, with the goal of facilitating marginalized people's access to vital natural resources. Lumbi speaks about issues affecting women, girls around the world, and offers her knowledge and expertise on solutions. Guys, please help me welcome Lumbi to the Africana Woman Mic. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm so excited to be here talking to you
I'm
today.
I'm excited too. Really
thank you so much for having me on, and I just cannot wait.
Oh, thank you. All right, let's jump in. What is your favorite childhood memory?
Just growing up with my parents in the countryside, I would say, in Gwatemba, Zimbabwe. Growing up, just being loved, feeling that sense of being loved and being the last one out of 11 children, I felt like I was spoiled sometimes because I was getting everything. So those memories come back and I feel like a child over and over. And it's like, and everybody up to today, they're still like my siblings will say, oh, don't say that because Lumbi's in the room. Like I'm still a child.
11 siblings.
Yes.
Wow. I grew up with one sibling. So I'm always like, my mind is always blown because I cannot even imagine having 10 other people running around like,
Yeah.
was
Imagine.
that like?
It wasn't really bad because they were not all like at the same time there when I was growing up. We're kind of spread out, you know, they were going to school. Some of them were here in the US, and I was in Zimbabwe with just a few of them. So I didn't grow up like around all of them, but there were times when we're all together and I just felt so loved and so spoiled, and everybody just bought me something. I was just like this little girl just floating around all this love. It's just so much fun.
So you grew up in is you said Gwatemba?
Gwatemba, which is the Filabuzi area.
Okay, is that north, south, which side?
More like on the north side, I guess you could say.
Okay. And how long were you there?
Not for very long. I was there until I was like in the sixth grade, I guess at that time. I don't know why my parents felt like we needed to move. All the children need to be in the inner city so we could learn, because there was nothing we could learn there, you know. Sometimes, you know, parents do certain things to protect us as children, to give us the possibility, I mean, the opportunities to learn from others so that we don't miss out. So I think they sent us to the inner city to live with my uncle, was my mom's brother in the city. And so we left it like with my cousins, with my nephew, sorry, with my nephew and my niece, whom I lived with at the same time. We grew up together about the same age. So we left and lived in the inner city with my uncle, William, and his children, my cousins, which was lovely. But I still remember how much I missed home when I left. I felt like I was so young because I was only like, I just like barely finished sixth grade. And they were like, you're done. Go, be on your own. Go live with your uncle and learn and just, you know, navigate the world. So that was fun.
So, did you ever go to boarding school though?
Yes. Because I lived with my uncle for like a year, I would say seventh grade. Then I went to a boarding school at Matobo Missionary School, which was way, way out in the country, you know. And I thought, and I really, really wanted to go to Matobo. I'd heard a lot of things about Matobo because my sisters went to the same school. They used to talk about it, and I used to just admire and envy, and really, literally, really envy them that they went to Matobo Secondary School. And I wanted to go there. So I qualified, and boy, was I happy. But once I was there, I was like, oh my God, I don't think I like this. It was so different from what I imagined. It wasn't really how I imagined it. But I was there, so I just had to just bear it and just stay there until I finished. So I just stayed there, just went to school and finished.
Oh, so what did you have in mind? Like when you were thinking boarding school, what was your vision?
I thought here's what I didn't envision. Let me put it this way. I did not envision, this was after the war, you know, after that whole war, we just got an independence in Zimbabwe. I did not envision washing, like taking showers out of buckets, you know, cold showers, because there was nothing, there was no heating system. I did not envision that. I did not envision the living conditions that were like dilapidated. I did not envision that. And I did not envision the kind of food that we'll be eating every day, the beans over and over, just the nutrition part of it. I did not like that. I just felt like, I was out there. It was just different environment from what I did imagined. That it was like, a different type of environment where people were just very happy and just everything was abundant. I did not imagine that I would have trouble finding resources, like minor resources, like things that women need in life, that I have to bring those from the inner city, feminine products, bring them from the inner city because they were not available at Matobo Secondary School. Pretty much basic necessities were just not there. It was not like readily available. So I did not imagine that. So that was kind of, I don't know what to say. It was quite shocking to me to see that maybe when my sisters went before the war, things were better. It's possible that things were better. But after the war, things were not good at all. And I just happened to be there at that time, so.
Yeah. You know what, though? That sounds very familiar to my experience of boarding school. And I went to boarding school in 1997, right? So I went to a Catholic girls' boarding school and, bathing out of buckets, cold water at 5 a.m. You're running to go to the pump to pump your cold water. And then you're like, one water, one soap, the food, the beans every day, yeah, it sounds actually very, very familiar. So I'm not even sure if it's like there was that stark difference or that's just how they are, like across different countries. Because that literally like my experience, like to the T.
Exactly. Do you know, I still have nightmares up to today. I don't know why. I just distasted some of the things, the wash area where women would wash, like as if it was like prison. To me, it felt like prison. I don't know. Like in a straight line, and it was always like nasty and very dirty, the floors, because people just washed. They didn't care about cleaning up, And this is women, And I just have nightmares, and even the toilets. So,
Because now I'm thinking, because they would give us chores. There was nobody who was there to clean the school, right? So everybody was given designated an area where you had to clean. So I was designated the toilets, I think for at least 3 years. When I think about using public toilets, like you people don't even understand the trauma that I have. I cannot, like, even if it's like I'm in a hotel and then I'm like, okay, I have to use the toilet. Like, I have to psych myself up because I have seen things, guys. I have seen things in public toilets. Gosh. And then
I
when you
know
go to bath,
exactly.
you can't bath like barefoot. You have to bath with slippers. And there's like no way you're going to put your feet down. Please, I beg.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. How nasty it was, because people would just wash, and this—you can imagine women just washing. These are girls, right? We're young,
Period.
so you can
Period.
imagine. Just imagine anything that you imagine right now. That's what was there. So it just left this kind of feeling, that was like, oh my gosh, why did I choose this? this environment, but it was also a learning experience. I learned a lot. That's where I really became like closer to like not I was not that I wasn't before, but I participated in that like the events such as like church events, singing in the choir, revivals, church revivals, which actually helped in a way. To kind of, keep me grounded. continue to keep me grounded, because where I came from, my family was very much, they were very much Christians, and I went to church all the time. And but I mean, I continued in that environment, so that was good for me in a way, even though the environments were not what I expected. You know, there's always something good out of any bad
Oh yeah,
situation. I don't care how
absolutely.
bad it is. There's always something good that comes out of it. Yeah.
So you finish high school, then what happens?
Then I came to the US. I just, came to the US. I almost came before I finished high school, but my parents thought I was too young. So they're like, nah, she's too young. Let's wait until I finish high school and then, go to the US. So I finished high school, came to the US, and went to college here in the US, and did my computer science and mathematics major, and graduated, and then started working in computer science. Worked in IT, sorry.
Miss Lumbi, like, hold up. Like, what year is this? You're talking about, I went and did computer science and mathematics, and I'm like, that is probably something that wasn't like common around the time that you were doing it, was it?
It's not that it wasn't common. It's you know what? When you're young, you just don't know what you're taking. Me, I was just taking anything. I didn't care, because I loved math. I've always loved math, by the way. I didn't want to just go into computer science and not have math major. Whether I was going to use it or not, I just wanted to continue with mathematics. I just had this love of math, and it's crazy. Because I graduated, I decided to just graduate, minor in mathematics at least, and major in computer science. So I did that, and two majors, two degrees, and then started working. Worked for companies like JPMorgan Chase, as a software engineer. And moved around, just learning.
Lumbi, do you know what I just love? I love how you're so like just so casual about it. Like, I just came from Zimbabwe, and then I was doing computer science and mathematics, and and then I went on to work for these amazing companies. Like, people, are you listening? This woman, I can't. Okay.
It's like
Okay,
before I
so
even
it's
finished
about your
school.
adjustment though. Like, when you came from Zimbabwe to the States, what states did you land in? What was that adjustment like? And
Culture shock is what I can say. I came to Texas, Dallas, Texas, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? I arrived in the winter. And it was very cold. I wasn't used to that, to the cold weather. And I remember, but I remember my brother saying, you gotta go to school, I said, in this cold, are you kidding me? He's like, you gotta go to school, you gotta find a job. I'm like, no, 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 no. I'm not finding a job. I'm too young for this, And to my brother, I was like, you're a grown up now. You're gonna, because I'd never worked in my life. I'd never worked at all when I came to this country. And my brother's like, you gotta find a job. I said, don't you think I'm too young to find a job? I'm too young for this, And he's like, everybody your age is working. Everybody, they start young at like 13 years old, they're working here. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't wanna work. I just wanna go to school. My brother said, and who's gonna support you? If you don't wanna work. I said, you are going to support me. He's like, no. I approach you to come to school, grow up, and work and support yourself. That's when I wanted to go home. I called my parents, and I remember talking to them and letting them know, don't worry, I'm coming back. And I said, the sooner I finish, the better. I'm going to go to school and finish and just go back home. And my parents were like, take your time, there's no rush, stay there. I said, you don't understand. I am coming home. I want to come home because people don't understand me when I'm speaking. I'm speaking in English. They don't understand. They keep saying, what? 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 And it's cold, and my brother is saying that I have to work. I don't want to work. Never worked in my life. I'm too young for this. And my parents kept saying, you're not too young. You need to grow up. And that's why we sent you to America, so you can grow up, be independent, and be yourself, find yourself. That's when things started clicking, because my brother did not wait. He was like, you're studying school. I did not even wait even a week to go to school. He's like, you're starting school right away. And you're going to start looking for a job. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Before I know it, I was going to school. Before I know it, I was working as a cashier. You know, it didn't care what kind of job I had. He's like, you're going to earn a living so you can provide for yourself, get an apartment for yourself, take care of yourself. I'm not used to this. I'm the last born in the family.
Playing, he was not kidding. He's like, get an apartment. Oh my god,
yeah, because me, I was like, I'm the last born in the family, shouldn't I just like be taken care of? Somebody, you're my brother, okay, you're the older one, and I need to be with somebody taking care of me, you know. I was used to that. My parents were taking care of me, and you know, I wasn't doing as much, you know, growing up. But he was like, no, gotta grow up. So I did, went to work. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Well, I guess shout out to your brother, because he threw you in the deep end. Like, first week you're in school, you're finding a job, you know, just like this. But definitely, you know, because I went to school in Connecticut. I went to college there. And then I was also in the UK. But when you see like the differences of how, you know, I guess responsibility is given to the younger, you know, to teenagers who are becoming young adults, you know, getting jobs and things like that. And like when I went into college, you know, they felt so, the students, they were much younger than me, but they felt so experienced, you know, like experienced in the work that we were doing. They were just advanced, experienced. I'm like, but when did you do this? Because I know I went to school as well. When did, you know what I mean? So yeah. I'm always a person who I like, I'm always telling people, or, you know, people who I know who've got young, you know, teenagers, like, you know, expose them a little, like find them something that they can do, something, you know, a little job here and there, you know. I've got a son,
right?
And he's 16 this year. He just turned 16.
Nice.
And I think when he was 14, we went to see a friend of mine. She's a fashion designer. And then he's like, oh, I want to hang out at the at her studio. And I'm like, no, that's a workplace. You know what I mean? I said, what you're going to do is you're going to email her, and then you're going to apply to be an intern. Okay.
Right.
So he's like 14 years old. Oh, maybe even younger. But anyway, so then I talked to her. I said, oh, Amara wants to come. Is it okay? Like, but he has to apply. You shouldn't just open the door for him. Like, this is not, like, your place of business is not a playground. You know what I mean? So he had to figure out how to write an application letter. He found her email, wrote her an email and said, oh, I'd like to be an intern for this holiday, da, da, da. And he did the whole process.
Nice.
And then she treated it like a proper work environment. And then she said, okay, fine. You know, and I think they might have done an interview, like a call or something. Oh. And then... and then he worked with her as an intern for one of these holidays. But I just feel like, you know, giving your children those practical experiences is so valuable.
Right.
Instead of just like, you know, when they go out after they finish university, that's when they're like, wait, how do I apply for a job?
Exactly. You know, that's so valuable. And that's why I cherish this so much, that my parents sent me to America. Because, I mean, if they had waited until I was grown up, I would have missed out on some opportunities. actually, more than anything, I wouldn't have been able to understand why I needed to be responsible, you know, to take responsibility, and just know that, you know, it has to be me providing for myself. No, nobody else is going to provide for me, you know.
Yeah,
so it was just like,
yeah,
it allowed me to grow up in other ways. Otherwise, I would not, I'd have never grown up.
Okay. So then what happened? Because you are still in the States and you told your parents, I'm coming back. I'm coming back.
Yeah, I say that and they said, no, you stay over there. I was like, you don't want me to come back? Don't you miss me? They're like, yeah, we miss you, but we want you to stay there, you know. And I was like, why is everybody saying that, you know, for me to stay over here? Like they don't love me or something, you know. They're like, we want you to be responsible, grow up and learn and take advantage of the opportunities, you know, given to you. America is a great place, you know. Be like your sisters who have grown up. Look at your sisters, you know. They went to America. Look at them now, where they are. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, you know, yeah, I want to be like my sisters. Yeah, I want to be like my, yeah, they're doing, they, look at them. They're doing, they're so independent. They're so successful. And then from there on, I took it seriously. I was like to my brother, yeah, I want to work and I want to have my own stuff. I want to have my own things, you know. You know, I just started being responsible. You know, I finished school and that's when I got married, had started having kids. And, but I was, you know, it wasn't until, I mean, I did go back to Zimbabwe because I mean, I was missing my family to visit. But when I went back, things were so different. It was no longer the environment I wanted to live in because also I was grown up. I left, when I left, I felt like, you know, I'd never seen anything other than where I was. You know, I'd never been to like big cities, major, you know, countries other than Zimbabwe. The only biggest place I've been to, I can say, was Botswana. And then in Zimbabwe, I'd been to Harare, Gwanda, Bulawayo, and Kwatemba. That was it. That was it. And so now imagine me coming to America. Things were so different and everything was just there. Accessibility of a lot of things. I was just like loving the fact that I was learning a lot and things that I didn't have access to, the knowledge I didn't have access to, I was getting it. So it was like a revelation, you know. And then I was starting to think now, imagine if in Zimbabwe they had this, you know, how much they can do, how far women can go, how far girls can, and stuff like that. I started making the connection, you know, and really loving the fact that I was here, you know, to learn all these things and be able to make a difference. It wasn't until my father got sick. My father was a humanitarian. He was working in the communities, helping women and girls, everybody really. And he never went to school. He was an orphan. He was an orphan. But he was educated by my mom just from being around my mom. So, but he had so much love for people, for families, communities, and so forth. So he was doing that. So when he was that sick, the only thing my father ever wanted was to help the women who were struggling with access to basic things. And he was working on those projects. And all he wanted us to do, his children to do, was to continue his work. He was like, you know, I promised these women, can you please go finish my work? I promised. I don't want to let them down. That was his concern. And here was me thinking, can you imagine? I mean, why would my father worry so much about other people and not worry about himself? He has so much love. And I learned from that, you know, that it's not always about me, but it's about other people and how I can make their lives better. Because by doing so, I'm making my own life better as well. So it's humility and just being a human being and paying attention in life, that we all coexist, but in order to have a better place, to make it, the world a better place, we all have to have equal, you know, access to opportunities. And that's what it takes, working together.
So you founded a nonprofit organization that is named after your father, J.B. Dondolo. When was it founded and what do you do?
So ideally, I can say 2012, even though it wasn't really active, that's when the idea was born. It didn't really become active until like 2015 and stuff like that, when we really started doing some work. So I named it JB Dondolo because I wanted it to serve as a constant reminder why I'm doing this in the first place. Because my parents, when I think about my parents and when I talk about my parents, I feel like I'm so grounded. You know, it's like a place that I can go to when I'm like doubting myself. I always go back to that place and say, who am I? And I will say, you know what? I'm this person, this woman who was loved by my parents. My parents did everything for me to be a better person. And what did they do? My parents were humanitarians. They did this and this and that. So I wanted something like that. And so naming it JB Dondolo, which means a cane used for walking, or, you know, a walking stick, right? Used for supporting a walking stick. To me, it's like I'm actually being like allowing people to lean on me as well, to say, I'm your walking stick, you know, pretend that I'm your walking stick and I can help you where I can help you. So I wanted to help these women to finish my father's work, first of all, to actually refurbish a clinic that he was working at, so that women wouldn't have to give birth on the floor, and so that women would have recovery beds and kind of restore dignity in women. But when I went to the clinic to help them with that, to introduce myself, to say I'm the daughter of the man who was working here, they kind of looked at me. They didn't know that this old man had a daughter this young. I guess to them I was young. I kept saying, I'm not young. I'm like, I'm an elderly person. I mean, I'm old. But they were looking at me like feeling sorry for me, saying, are you really, where would this old man have a child, a daughter this young? He was old. I said, yes, because my dad had me when he was very old. You know, I'm the youngest of the 11 children. And finally they believed and they were like, okay, maybe what you can do is just give us water and that's it. I'm like, oh, can you imagine? I actually took their advice and almost walked away with just give us water. And I was like, wow, what a great deal. Just water, I can come back here tomorrow and just give you water and I'm done. They're like, yeah. They're like, do it. But as I was turning, as I was about to walk away, I said, wait a minute. So you want me to give you water and forget about my father's work? They're like, yeah, pretty much. I said, no. What if I give you water? Would you let me work on the clinic and give and do everything my father wanted to do? They said, yes. I said, I'll be back tomorrow. Do you know, I was gone for years. I didn't know it was going to take me that long to provide water. I didn't know how hard it was going to be. It's not easy to provide water for any environment. I had to learn more about water, what it takes, work with the stakeholders, that also includes the cities, abide by the laws, the ordinances, and everything to make sure you're doing it right. I didn't know that. And I didn't have the money. It's expensive to provide water. Because it's not just like, oh, here's the water. It's in a glass. Here you go. It's not like that. It's the infrastructure, you know, the people. The infrastructure includes the water systems themselves. Are you going to drill? And if you're going to drill, where? And when you drill, is there going to be water? Do you need like a land surveyor? Do you need geologists? Do you need science and technology institutions to work with, partner with? Do you need to test the water, the quality of water? Who are the stakeholders? And the city, do they need to know? You need approvals. What kind of systems? There's a whole lot that goes into that. So I educate myself, kind of step back and educate myself and collaborate with everybody to get the buy-ins and everything. And that's how we did it. So finally, I decided at that time, since I've spent so much time learning about water, this is it for me. I said, I am going to do water for the clinic and for everybody else, not just the clinic, but women and girls. So that, because that really helped me tie into how I grew up. I remember growing up in Gwatemba, going to fetch water and walking miles away, you know, carrying buckets on my head and injuring my neck and everything, but still doing it. But it didn't prevent me from going to school though. In some other areas, it actually prevents girls from going to school because they spend a lot of time collecting water. Women spend hours and hours collecting water, up to 10 hours a day. So I decided, well, I want to bridge the gap, provide access to clean water for these women and girls so that they can participate in economically uplifting themselves. And girls can go to school 5 days a week. And babies don't have to die. This infant mortality has to stop because women are drinking dirty water, which is harmful to their unborn babies. So I wanted to stop that. So I found a way to do that using water as a gateway to get women and girls out of poverty. And that's me today.
So you provide water in a unique way, because usually when people think of, you know, like, let's say somebody going into community to help with water, they're thinking, oh, they're going to drill a borehole, or they're going to, you know, like, drill the borehole and have the pump and everything. But what do you do?
So I work with science and technology institutions to understand which water solutions to provide that are sustainable and you know, are customizable in each community, because there's no one size fits all. You know, if I go in and drill, what if I don't find water? And to be honest with you, every time when we drill, 50% of the time we don't find water. So we work to make sure that in the places where we can drill, we will drill. But in the places where we cannot drill, we'll provide a different system. Like we'll use technology. Either way, we use technology anyway. We'll provide above ground water systems. So that may be like a technology system that provides water above ground without digging anything. Maybe it's how we capture water from the atmosphere, which is why I partner with the technology institutions such as Helixa, who designed the technologies for water to create water from the atmosphere. And and actually provide water, you know, and in a modularized manner, but in a technological manner that is assured it will never fail because it has redundancy. It's technology. So there'll be those areas where we can provide that. There'll be areas where the drilling is appropriate. But we want to move away from the drilling part of it because we're thinking sustainability. If we drill, the borehole is likely to go dry at some point. You're going to have to drill again. That is not sustainable. So we're coming up with a sustainable way of doing things. And we find that technology is the way forward. Because if we can be creative enough and develop systems for that are technology driven, using AI and all that stuff now, I mean, then our chances of being sustainable are very high. We never have to do it again over and over. We do it one time and that's it. We don't have to worry about water again.
Yeah, so, you know, I have a lot of people that I know, a lot of people, especially like in the Africana woman community, they have brilliant ideas of how they want to work in the community, how they want, you know, different projects that they could bring according to their different strengths, right? Now, I think one of the main barriers that stops people from actually starting or doing anything is funding. So,
yes.
In terms of funding, what were your solutions? How do you find the funds to do these projects?
Campaigns. I'm always campaigning for funding. Our revenue model is diversified, meaning by revenue, I know that nonprofits always say there's no revenue for nonprofits. Yeah, there is revenue. Because without it, how are you going to operate? Revenue is what you're getting in, coming in. What you're going to have remaining to sustain yourself. So you got to have revenue. So our revenue model calls for diversification, meaning that we get funding through not just grants, because grants are not guaranteed at all. In fact, we don't rely on grants at all. And we get funding from partnerships and when we run a campaign for, say, for example, a campaign for water tanks, and we're saying that, well, we need $1,000 for, like, let's just say 2 tanks. And we say, okay, if we can raise $500, we'll try and find, like, a company that's going to match the funds and do, like, 500 so that we'll only raise 500, half of it. So that's one of it. A good example of that has been, like, Johnson & Johnson used to do that. So we used to do a lot with Johnson & Johnson. But also other companies do. And we get our revenue from the interns who are coming to learn. And once they learn how we do things, they want to run their own campaigns to help us. And they'll run campaigns to raise funds. Just recently, one of the interns raised $1,000, just like that, for water tanks. And also the youth ambassadors. We have our youth ambassadors who champion the initiatives for JP Dondolo, who spread the word about what we do and everything. And guess what? Not long ago, we had youth ambassadors raised $3,000, you know, to drill a borehole. Yeah. So things like that. We get also, like, from subscriptions, people subscribe on a monthly basis, sometimes on a yearly basis or quarterly basis. And from that, you know, we end up having enough, you know, for a water system. But pretty much we have even like galas, like end of year gala, where we have like auction items, our auction paintings that are done by interns. They will paint items that we can auction for to raise funds. So our interns, we value our interns a lot because they do a lot of stuff that helps us, our organization, sustain itself. So there's so many ways, there's a ton and ton of things. And also from storytelling, like right now, sharing all this stuff and who knows who's going to see it. I may be hired to speak, but by hiring, mean that they're going to donate to JP Dondolo and I'm going to speak. You know what I'm saying? So if they donate to JP Dondolo, then that's also funds for JP Dondolo. And I get to speak and share our impact about JP Dondolo, how we're doing it, how we're uplifting women. And in doing so, I uplift more women in that space. I connect with more people. I connect with someone who may donate. So yeah, that's how we raise funds.
I think you had to do a lot of learning.
Yes.
I think, you know, when you're saying it, like, okay, I went back and then I had to learn about water, but there's so many different things that are involved, especially when you have that nonprofit organization. Of course, there's the work that you're doing, the work that you're championing, but then there's also the business side of it, as much as people don't like to talk about it in regards to a nonprofit, but you know, it does have that business element in terms of, you know, money coming in and how do you make sure the money is coming in? Because I think a lot of times just hearing the words nonprofit, people just feel like, okay, it's always donation, donation, donation. And they don't actually ever think about, you know, that sustainability as well. So in as much as you are looking for solutions that are sustainable for the communities that you're working in, you also have to have a sustainable organization and have a structure around that, right? And I think that's the missing piece in when people think about, I want to run a nonprofit. And I'm like, it's not as fabulous as just, oh, let me just wake up and run a nonprofit, you know? I commend you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think of it that way. They always think, oh, it's just a nonprofit, just donations, donations. It's like you have to expand your mind, learn and continue learning about ways you can raise funds. Don't just wait for grants. Grants, I don't even count on grants at all. I don't. Yes, we do get grants throughout the year, but I don't really wait on grants at all.
Talk to me about the impact. So you started in the community that you started with the hospital, right?
Yes.
But where else have you worked? Has it just been Zimbabwe? Like where have you worked?
Okay, so actually we're international. I'm so happy to say that. We are registered in two places. We're registered in Zimbabwe, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. We're also registered in the US. So we have done a lot of impact. Let me start with Africa. In Zimbabwe, it's not just the hospital, by the way. It's not just also the schools, the two schools that we've helped of 500 people. In Nyamandlovu, Igosi, we helped over 20,000 people. Because we installed the filtration system at a clinic that services 20,000 plus people now. So, and then we went to Matobo Hills, where I went to school, Matobo. It's very ironic how things just lined up like that. So now we're helping women there, and that community is of 90,000 people. We're still there, working there, And we want to really do all, for now, want to do all the boreholes that they are asking for. However, 50% of the time, we have not been able to find water when we drill because the place is so rocky, so dry. So we want to, in 2024, we are looking to implement a technology, water technology systems in Matobo Hills, above ground where we don't drill at all, the modularized water technology systems with Helixa technology so that we can see how many people we can help. That's gonna be a game changer right there. It's gonna be huge, a game changer. So that's the impact. And also all over Africa, we also have something called the Music for Water, where we always seek for a song that is international, by the way, participated internationally. People submit their songs. We're actually giving a one-time distribution, music distribution with GMIR, Grand Mountain International Records. We stopped doing that as of last year. They were getting their songs distributed globally, internationally. So we actually, you know, we're in all the countries. The impact that we made was in all the countries with our humanitarian song. Imagine how much a song can touch people and change how people live and how people react and how people treat water and how they, you know, care about their environment and how they manage water resources and stuff like that. So that song we played all throughout the year over and over, the songs that we find, and we make them our background music over and over, and it encourages people to change their behaviors. So that's one of them. But also in the US, we've impacted in the US, similar cases in the Navajo Nation. We helped the Navajo Nation during COVID. Their situation was that, like 11 people live in one room. Houses made of one room. 11 people during COVID were living in one room. We gave them, sanitizers that last for like 8 hours a day, at least so that they could sanitize themselves. And that was one of them. And then in Skid Row, with the 10,000 people who are unhoused population, we've been in Skid Row now for 3 years, helping the people in Skid Row with feminine products, and sanitization and stuff like that. We continue doing that. And I mean, we've distributed feminine products, 32,000 feminine products in the US alone, just to women and girls. So it's not much, but we've done that. We continue to work in so many cities where there's no water. New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey is one of them. Texas, during the floods and all that stuff, we've helped a lot. So yeah. So that's it is.
Lumbi, I've got so many questions, but anyhow, we have to be winding down. But listen, when you think of your dad, JB, and he's just looking at this water lady, his baby girl, what do you think he would say?
I think he would say, "Well done. Well done." He would say, "I'm so glad you listened when I said, please go help the women. I made a promise. I want to keep my promise, and you kept my promise." I think he would say that. And my mom would probably say, "You listen to me to not worry about what people say about you, because you are beautiful, you the way you are, and you don't have to measure yourself or compete with anyone. You're beautiful the way you are. Just listen to your inner self and do what Lumbi says."
Yeah, I love it. So in the Africana woman community, we have a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. And I've got four questions for you, just so we wind down. Just say whatever comes to mind, whatever you think of. Okay. So the first
Sure.
question, what are you rooted to?
Learning.
What are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Laughter.
So, laughter is for which one? The mind, the body, or the soul?
For yeah, it's for everything. I
Okay.
laugh a lot.
Yeah.
I believe in laughter. It helps my mind and my body. When you laugh, it helps, with the flow, blood flow and everything,
Yeah.
all the way, everything is connected to your brain. My soul. Because when I laugh, it rejuvenates my soul. I feel good again, over and over. So I laugh a lot.
Okay. Do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
Yes, I do. Confidence, self-confidence. I think that has become a superpower, because I used to worry about what people say about me, what people say at all, but now I don't really care what anyone says. you can say anything about me and say somebody said this about me or said what, you know what? I take my mother's advice. You know, if you know what someone says is not true, and you know deep in your heart that is not true, why do you even worry? Is it necessary for you to worry? You can just go on with your life. You know, there's so much in the world to do than worry about what people say. The world needs me. It doesn't need people who talk about me and say this and that and worry about what I'm doing. I don't care what anybody says about me. I'm just going to do what Lumbi does.
Yeah, I like that. All right, and then your last question is, what do you know as a certainty?
I know that tomorrow is not guaranteed. And that's certain. Because it just isn't. I've seen life is too short. I've seen people who were confident saying, tomorrow I'm going to do this, and then there's no tomorrow. What happened? So I live my life knowing very well that tomorrow may be different. My abilities may be different tomorrow. While I'm able to do something, I better do it now. So I believe in the now than tomorrow.
You guys, I hope you were taking notes. So you just need to go back and start writing down all of this wisdom. I love it. All right.
Yeah.
Lumbi, how do we support you? Where do we find you? Where are you on socials? Where is the water lady? That's what we need to know.
The water lady. you can follow me on social media at Lumbi Malambo. What a difficult name. Or you can just go to JB Dondolo, jbdondolo.org, and you can donate to support us. You can also subscribe and to support with our sustainability cause, so that we can always, so that we're able to always provide for women and girls water, access to water, so they can have life, better life. So yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. No, the pleasure is all mine. Trust me. Thank you. Thank you so much. I have enjoyed this conversation.
Yes.
I really do appreciate your time. We have a bit of a time difference, guys, and today the internet was just doing the most, but we got it done, and I'm very pleased.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on here. I really appreciate it more than you know. And I cannot wait to promote this and promote you, whatever you do. I cannot wait.
Thank you. I told you, Lumbi is amazing. She is so soft-spoken, no ego behind the work that she does. The Water Lady is singularly focused on providing solutions using technology to impoverished communities. I am such a fan. Please, I implore you to support JB Dondolo. Go to their website, jbdondolo.org, and see what you can do, how you can support. I particularly love that the focus is not on drilling boreholes, which is, it's not sustainable, guys, especially when this world has no desire to protect water catchment areas or the groundwater levels. Another thing I hope you took note of was her approach to the financial stability of her NGO. More often than not, it is women that are, you know, creating NGOs. We want to help, we want to support the community. It's mostly women, right, who are creating NGOs. But what has happened is that the model is usually donor or grant based, and that's not working. It has not been working for a very long time. Lumbi pointed out that number one, diversification of fundraising is necessary. Number two, partnerships are essential. Number three, creativity or innovation in your approach to find mutually beneficial solutions is the key. Guys, please give the Water Lady her roses.
find Lumbi on Facebook or on Instagram or LinkedIn at Lumbi Mlambo and say thank you. Tell her you heard her on the Africana Woman podcast and let her know what you learned. I already said it, support JB Dondolo because the work they do cuts across all sectors and communities. Let me tell you, we're going to need this work very, very soon. We need it right now, in fact. Anyway, we want to keep the conversation going. Let's meet in the book club, the visionary socials, and talk about what solutions are available to us. Because whether we like it or not, guys, our way of living must change. In fact, it has already changed. It's shifted. And one more thing that I would add is that we need to shift the belief that no electrical power is a direct indicator of poverty. That's not true. We're just going into a new normal of being and we have to adapt, okay? So the best way to support Africana Woman is to share the podcast. Post a screenshot to your stories. Share links with friends. Do what you gotta do to let people know about the conversations we have here. The Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman Network. My name is Chulu.